Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by Matt Corey of BP Boston. Matthew Corey, how are you today?
I'm good, Jake. How are you doing?
I'm doing better than the Red Sox bullpen.
It's been a bit of a rough day for pitchers of all sorts today in Baltimore. But as is often the case, talking about a game as it is live while on a podcast is a terrible idea. So I think we should move on to our agenda items.
True. Yes. We're only six relievers into this game, so we have plenty of other stuff to talk about.
I will say this. I certainly will freak out depending on what happens in this game. Just so you know.
Well, good. Let's talk about that bullpen as it relates to David Price. David Price has recently been activated from the DL. They decided to move him to the bullpen. And things went well in his first appearance. He threw 21 pitches over two scoreless innings. He used his breaking pitches as something that he hasn't done before. He hit 95, threw a curveball, a cutter, a changeup. He looked kind of like David Price is supposed to look.
Yeah.
My question to you, Matt, is it the right move to keep him in the bullpen for the remainder of the year and through the playoffs? Or should they think about, you know, letting this guy loose again?
Yeah, I mean, I think a large portion of the answer to this question is medical information that we don't possess. So, you know, in that sense, it's really hard to answer. I think he has a lot more value to the Red Sox as a starting pitcher, but I'm guessing that, you know, the health of his arm prevents him from entering that role with any certainty. I mean, but part of that is where we are in the season. There's just not enough time to ramp him back up in a cautious sort of way, given the money and years remaining on his contract. Like the team has an obligation to obviously to the player, but to themselves to be gentle with Price. And I just don't think that, you know, mid-September they can do that. So I think that's a big part of the problem. As far as him in the bullpen, it's hard not to like him in the bullpen. He looked fantastic, the other day. Like you said, he threw two innings. He got some strikeouts. His off-speed pitches were good. He was in the mid-90s with his fastball. I mean, if that's what you're going to get, that's – especially for two innings, I mean, that's fantastic and incredibly valuable to the Red Sox, especially if – and I may be jumping ahead here – Doug Fister ends up with a start in the playoffs. So do I like – Price in the pen? Yeah, I really do. I wish he could be a starter. I'm hopeful that whatever his problem is can be solved over the offseason and he can come back as a starter next year. I wouldn't call myself optimistic about that, but I'm hopeful. But as far as, you know, whatever they can get out of him now, I think the bullpen is probably their best bet for getting value out of David Price in 2017.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's too much of a risk to move him to the starting rotation at this point. I just think that it's going to take some time to get him stretched out. You were completely right. We don't know what the medical situation is and whether or not that's even possible. But we do know from this extremely small sample size that his stuff looks like it's working right now. And a bullpen role is a place where he could be an incredible weapon. And we saw what Andrew Miller did in the playoffs. And I'm not going to equate two innings of David Price to Andrew Miller, because that would be the ultimate in hyperbole. But there's no doubting the fact that the Red Sox could use another huge weapon in the bullpen right now. When I look at that unit, I see Craig Kimbrell, I see Addison Reed, and I see a whole bunch of question marks. And whether or not that's fair, that's sort of the way that it's been as of late. And so if you can add a weapon like David Price, who can really shorten games for you down the stretch and into the playoffs, I think that's nothing but a positive for this team. So I'm really excited about the prospect of watching reliever David Price, because when we had Alex Spear on, he mentioned we were talking about the last time David Price pitched out of the bullpen. We were on the receiving end of some pretty nasty stuff in 2008. So
yes,
maybe he can do that to some other teams. That'd be good.
That would be nice. I'm a little more optimistic about the bullpen overall than it sounds like you are. I mean, obviously Kimbrell is, you know, fantastic. And I'm hoping that, you know, Farrell's going to call on him for more than a one out save. You know, once the playoffs come around. But there's also Brandon Workman, and I've been really impressed with him. Like you said, there's Reed, and then, you know, any starter that isn't in the rotation in the playoffs, especially in a short series where you only need three starters, you can pull from those other guys. So you can have an Eduardo Rodriguez come, you know, come out of the bullpen. And I mean, I love that idea. You know, you can get as many as one or two, three innings out of a guy like that potentially. So yeah, I think they're probably a little stronger in the pen than people are giving them credit for. And that's, you know, saying something, because the bullpen has been fantastic this year. I don't know if you assembled this same group of guys and put them on the 2018 Red Sox if they would be as good, but that's what's actually happened. They've been very good. So there you go.
Yeah, I agree. The unit has been really good as a whole for the year. I think that what we're seeing right now is probably just a little bit of fatigue on the part of some guys, like maybe Matt Barnes kind of stands out to me as a guy who's faded a little bit. And you mentioned yeah. Workman, who has been just an incredible surprise this year coming back and pitching as well as he has. But since the 24th of August, he's given up two runs, one run, one run, one run, another run, and a run tonight. So that's six, seven appearances over the last couple weeks where he's given up runs. So he has faded a little bit as of late, and you have to wonder a little bit whether or not, you know, ramping up and going from where he was in the spring, which it was almost unimaginable that he'd be doing what he's doing now, to doing what he is doing. I wonder if that has kind of caught up with him a little bit. So there's just a little bit of concern there for me, and maybe it's overblown at this point. It's still a pretty good unit. So.
No, you make a good point about Workman. I like his stuff a lot, and he's not walking guys. So, you know, out of the bullpen, I like the possibility of, you know, his mid 90s and then the slider and throw something else too. I'm not sure if it's a changeup or something. But he's throwing strikes, and I'm optimistic that, you know, that'll play. Even though, like you point out, he did give up a run tonight. He's given up, you know, runs, like you said.
They classify that pitch as a curveball and a cutter that he throws. So those that cutter might look a little like a slider at times too.
Yeah, that's probably where my confusion comes from. In any case, even without Workman, even if I'm wrong about him, then I still think you're, you know, you've got a four or five deep bullpen where you can, you know, where you can really, you know, shut another team down. So I think I think that's, especially considering, you know, the starting rotation is a strength of this team, or at least one of the strengths of this team. That should they should be able to go, you know, longer than you would hope, five innings in the playoffs. So once you you know, get to the sixth or seventh inning, then, you know, you've got those five guys, you can mix and match a little bit, especially if you've got a lead.
So let's talk about that starting rotation a little bit. And Doug Fister pitched tonight. He didn't pitch particularly well. He went two innings and gave up five runs. Going all the way back to June 25th, Fister has only given up four or more runs four other times besides that. So he's been a really, really good pitcher for the better part of, you know, 2-3 months now at this point. So it's hard to think that he's not going to be a part of that playoff rotation, even with the back-to-back bad starts here. Are you worried at all about those back-to-back starts? Do you think that's a sign of anything going forward, or is this just a blip in the radar? And I mean, is the sample size now big enough that we can say that Doug Fister is a pretty reliable guy at this point?
No, I don't think you can say he's a pretty reliable guy at this point. Given, you know, the way his last two seasons went, I think it's pretty easy to have a couple bad starts and go, uh-oh. And fairly so. I mean, considering, you know, this guy didn't Couldn't make the Angels rotation this year. That is incomprehensible to me. I mean, part of that could be, you know, stupidity on the part of the Angels,
right.
missing out on this. But you know, he's not like some, you know, amazing stuff guy. He's walking a fine line here, you know, and the walks are kind of an issue for him. Like if you look at his walk rate through, you know, when he was really good, it was pretty low. And it's gone up, and it's stayed up, you know, this year. He's made up for it with strikeouts. I don't think he struck anyone out tonight. I think that's, you know, part of the thing. He's got to strike guys out because the walk rate is a little too high for a guy who's, you know, given up so much contact as he traditionally has. So am I concerned about him? Yeah, I am. Right now, I am concerned enough that I probably wouldn't give him a postseason start. I would probably go with Porcello and Eduardo over him. But you know, there's more of the season left. We're not done yet, and my guess is if he has two really good starts between now and the end of the year, or three or whatever the number is, then you know, opinions will change. A lot of this stuff is, you know, is guesswork and playing the hot hand. So but yeah, I mean, for me, these last two starts, and especially tonight where he just looked atrocious, you know, it's he's pitched himself off the playoff rotation if it were up to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seemed like just last week before these back-to-back starts, it was not a conversation of whether or not he's going to be on the postseason roster. It was like, all right, how many guys is he going to pass? Is he going to be the third guy to take the ball for this team? Or
right.
I even heard Lou Merlone on the baseball show say, you know, maybe you'd want to put him in between Sale and Porcello just to switch up the righty-lefty thing. So that's how good he was throwing the ball. Conversely, over that time frame, Eddie, over his last three starts, has looked really good. He only gave up two earned runs against Toronto, one earned run against Oakland, and then two earned runs against Tampa Bay. Granted, he's not exactly facing a murderer's row there. Those
yeah.
three teams suck. But the strikeout numbers were really good for him, and in two of those starts, he only walked one guy. So maybe we are seeing an Eduardo Rodriguez that's rounding into form. So I think it's a big possibility. I still think, though, that your best postseason roster is one where Eddie Rodriguez is a weapon out of the bullpen because he does have that strikeout stuff and he does pitch from the left side, than it is with Doug Fister. Because if Doug Fister is not in your rotation, Doug Fister is not on your postseason roster, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, it's probably true, and I haven't, you know, gone through and made a postseason roster, but I, off the top of my head, I think that's mostly correct. I think, though, with when you're selecting starting pitchers, you know, for a postseason start, what you need to insure against is the disaster start, right? I mean, you just, it's okay to you know, pitch five innings and give up four runs.
Mm-hmm.
You can survive that. And if a, you know, in the postseason, if a guy, you know, gives up, you know, two runs in the third inning and a run in the fourth, you know, he's probably not even staying in for the fifth, depending on who it is, you know.
Right.
You've got a pretty quick hook in the postseason. What you need to avoid is five runs in the first inning, five runs in the second inning. And that's exactly what Fister has done these last couple outings. And, you know, that his first inning, I mean, that's been the big problem for him. Like, even when he was pitching well, he would still give up runs in the first inning. I forget what the exact stat is, but I think he had an ERA before tonight in the first inning over six. And, you know, that's problematic when you're facing a team like, you know, the Indians or the Astros or the Yankees. So, I think I would be inclined to start a guy who has a higher floor, and probably a similar ceiling, quite honestly. But I think you need to ensure against the disaster start, especially with this offense, which, you know, tonight accepted. I mean, the way that they managed to come back from down 6-1 in this game is great. But this is not a, you know, a high flying, big comeback kind of offense. They're just not that good. in terms of hitting. They don't have the power to do that. You have to string way too many hits together, and that's a tough thing to do in the postseason when you're facing, Dallas Keuchel, Corey Kluber, et cetera. So anyway, that's the reasoning why I still wouldn't go with Fister.
Yeah, I have to push back a little bit on that though, because the one thing that you said there was you have to protect against the blow up start. And I really think that if you're looking to protect against the blow up start, none of these options are looking particularly good to you, because Porcello has given up more home runs and gotten eliminated more than almost anybody in baseball this year in the first two innings. So he is certainly not somebody who is going to be immune to that. Eduardo Rodriguez is king blow up in the first inning when he's not 100% healthy. And he's done that a
But
number
he
of
is,
times this year.
but he is now. That's the thing, right? I mean,
Well,
I.
we've seen him for three starts that he looks that way, right? But the three starts before that were terrible. So I guess what I'm saying is that, like, this thing is gonna come down to probably the last week. Before the postseason, before John Farrell looks at these three not so great options and chooses two or one. But, like, we can't feel great about the prospects of any of them at this moment, right?
Yeah, no, I just have a lot more confidence, I guess it is, in those, in Porcello and in Eduardo.
Because of track record and pedigree, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're talking about, and it depends on how far back you're willing to look, right? I mean, if you're looking just this year, obviously, maybe Porcello is the odd man out. If you're talking about just the last 2 years, well, Porcello is going to pitch. He won the Cy Young last year. And things change the further back you go. But I think when you're looking at Fister's stuff, when you're looking at the way that he's pitched recently, I think it's, for me anyway, it's a pretty easy call at this point. Now, like I said, there's going to be some more starts between now and then, now and when the decision has to be made. And I imagine, the calculus will change a little bit based on that. So we'll have to see. But for now, I think I think Chris Sale, and then Pomerantz, and then I'd probably go Eduardo, and then I mean that's the first series. So
Well, fair enough. I think that is as reasonable as any rotation I could put together at this point. All of it's not going to matter though if the Red Sox can't hit in the postseason. And I read a really sort of mind-blowing line from Jen McCaffrey today in one of her articles. A fantastic article as usual from her. But she says in 36 games in the second half entering Thursday, Christian Vasquez was hitting .339 with an 880 OPS, six doubles, a triple, and three homers. He is our DH tonight in the Red Sox game and has two more hits.
yeah, one of them was a double.
This is incredible. And I guess I want to just take a second to reflect on how incredible this is for a guy who was thought to maybe not hit enough to be an everyday player at one point. And I want to ask you the question, is this a positive or is this an indictment on the offense that a guy like this is being relied on at the DH spot at this point? Like, is this a sign of doom? I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. I can't tell whether I'm happy or like really worried about this.
It's funny, when you sent me the notes, I didn't completely grasp what you meant by like an indictment of the offense. And then hearing you say that, I'm like, oh, now I get it. No, I think it is an indictment of it's a, well, it's an indictment of a couple things. It's an indictment of Hanley Ramirez primarily, right?
Who recently had that MRI and is not healthy.
And so that's the other thing is Hanley Ramirez's health. I mean, ideally speaking, you're talking about a guy who's going to hit close to 300 and slug, 530 or something. But that player has not showed up this year really at any point. And so, the team is kind of scrambled to and also, continue to play him to the extent that they can, in hopes that he, that the player they wanted to, that the production they were hoping for would show up. So, but I think at this point, you have to make do with what you got. And Vasquez is, you know, like Jim McCaffrey pointed out, he is the hot hand right now. So it makes sense, to put him out there while he's hitting. I don't have a problem with that. Pedroia took a foul ball off the face tonight. So in addition to what's he got, a knee problem also and a thumb problem or something. And there's just a laundry list of stuff with that gentleman. So, and you know, Eduardo Nunez is out. Devers has not been hitting, on and on and on. So I think you just gotta, take the best, make the best out of it that you possibly can. And I'm actually kind of happy that, that Farrell is doing that. I'll end it on that. I'm happy that Farrell's doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very clearly his best option right now at DH. And it's crazy that you're relying on a guy who was, you know, your second catcher on opening day as your DH right now. But I want to talk about Hanley for a second, because I don't think we've spelled out on this show yet this year how remarkably bad Hanley Ramirez has been. In the second half so far, he has a .206 average, and he's hit for 9 home runs during that span. If you take July out of the equation, where he batted a respectable .271 with 6 home runs, he's been a pretty pathetic player on the entire year, and he's hit lefties at a .188 clip. So this guy has been just a shell of himself pretty much the entire year, and has not been a reliable piece offensively. He's been well below average, and this is a guy, 22 home runs, on the surface that looks okay, but everything else under that's been really ugly, and he's just been so trick-or-treat. So, you mentioned all the other warts going on with the offense. It's really difficult to see where this is going to come from. And you talked about Devers, too. I think that's someone we need to talk about, considering he's gone 26 games now. And if this one finishes up, it'll be 27 in a row without a home run, where he's batting like .224 during that time span. So,
he had 2 hits tonight, though. That's nice.
It is, yeah. That's a good sign, and hopefully he can adjust. But so far, the adjustment hasn't happened. I guess the two positives we can take out of this are Xander Bogaerts is starting to look a little bit better recently, and Mookie Betts has started to look a lot better recently. And those are really the guys, along with Andrew Benintendi, who's been really good, that you're going to be relying on come the postseason.
Yeah, it's true. I wrote a piece for BP Boston last Friday on the 15th about, titled "How the Red Sox Just Won the World Series," and so I sort of worked backwards from suppose the Red Sox win the World Series, how could they possibly pull that off? And I think you're gonna need some superhuman performances from guys who haven't given that to you during the course of the year, because as we talked about, the offense just hasn't really been there this season. So David Ortiz is not walking through that door as much as we all would love him to, but someone's going to have to hit like him in the postseason. If you look at the 2013 World Series, which is sort of our most recent Red Sox triumph, the whole team really didn't hit at all, with the exception of Ortiz, and Ortiz hit something like 6, 17, 8, whatever, and then with a 1,200 slugging. I mean, it was utterly nuts.
Yeah.
Without that, I'm not sure the Red Sox would have scored. So you're going to need somebody like Hanley to suddenly get healthy and turn it on. That's sounding less and less likely, considering, the fact that he just had an MRI on his shoulder. I think a more likely candidate is someone like Mookie Betts, who's had a pretty weak second half of the season, but like you said, is starting to turn it on a little bit. He had a pretty hard hit double down the left field line today, Monday, with the bases loaded. Some pretty huge in the moment there. If he's able to do that in the postseason, then the team is gonna have some success, I think.
Yeah, you know, I really liked your article that you wrote, and I thought it was interesting. And what I started thinking about after reading the article, as you
How
laid
wrong
out, not how wrong you are, but which of these three things is most likely, is kind of what I
Oh, just.
started thinking about. And I think if I was to rank them in terms of the bullpen stepping up, starting pitching stepping up, or someone turning into David Ortiz,
Yeah.
Oddly enough, I think I'm betting on a random solo, like offensive performance, like a totally insane series from a guy like Mookie Betts or, you know, Mitch Moreland or, you know, someone on the team just going bananas. I think that's really the way that this team separates itself because the starting pitching in bullpen have just felt so much more stable to me this year. Than the offense has, and I really think that the offense is going to be the deciding factor come the postseason.
No, I think you're right. I don't know that I would rank that as the most likely thing, but I could definitely see Mookie just rediscovering that. If you remember what he did last year against the Orioles, whenever the Orioles showed up, dude was off the hook. And I could see that kind of thing happening where we reach a point where they're almost like just intentionally walking him every time he comes up. By the way, I sold Ortiz short on the 2013 World Series. He didn't hit 620 or something. He hit 688.
That's fairly good.
Yeah, that was pretty good. The rest of the team, just for reference, the rest of the team, not including Ortiz, hit 169, 225 with a 309 slugging percentage.
So you're saying there's a chance?
Yeah, I mean, I think the rest of the Red Sox can manage that. I think it's finding someone to hit 688 with a 1.188 slugging percentage is that's going to be the taller order of the day. It's sort of funny too that seems like a more likely scenario as opposed to, Chris Sale going all Madison Bumgarner on us, right? I mean,
Right.
after the first half, I mean, of the season. I think that would have been the more likely scenario, Sale just crushing one team in a short series. But now that seems like that's unlikely.
Right.
And it wouldn't even shock me if, based on how Sale has pitched, that, he doesn't even shut the other team down completely.
Yeah, and I think that brings up a big predicament. Like, what does John Farrell do with Chris Sale right now? Because he posted a 4.38 ERA in August, a 3.94 so far in September. He hasn't
Yeah.
looked like himself. Should they shut him down? I mean, I think that this notion of pitching him so he can get to 300 strikeouts is probably not the right move at this point for a team with a three-game lead in the division. I think that Cy Young race with Kluber is probably looking more and more difficult by the day for him to be the favorite in. So if I was John Farrell right now, I would make sure that Chris Sale has all the extra rest and R&R that he needs, and I would not worry about like him losing his sharpness or anything like that. I really think it's fatigue at this point with this guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. I mean, and I don't say that to disagree with you. I legitimately don't know. The thing about, Sale is he's had this, sort of catalog throughout his career where, he kind of wears down in the second half. And I wonder about that. But I also wonder if. If shutting him down or giving him extra rest, if that is really, the antidote. I almost said anecdote. I get those two words confused. And I don't know that that solves the problem. So,
Yeah, I mean, he's never pitched in the postseason, so I guess it's really
yeah.
difficult to know whether or not that solves the problem. But you're right. I mean, he's been a 2.74 career ERA in the first half, 3.28 in the second half. That's a pretty sizable difference. I mean, both are great, but
Yeah.
it's been really different.
Well, it's going to be tough because, they're going to face a really good pitcher to lead off the whatever series they play in. And I actually, even before the Indians went on that insane run, I felt like the Red Sox probably matched up a little bit better against the Astros than they do against the Indians,
I totally agree.
just because of the pitching. I think the Red Sox actually have an advantage over the Astros in terms of the pitching staff. And I
McCullers
don't.
is hurt again, by the way.
I'm sorry?
McCullers is hurt again, by the way, so I think
Oh.
that even strengthens that idea.
Yeah, it may. Although, if you remember last year, we were all psyched to face the Indians because all of their starting pitchers were hurt. And
Yeah, that went well.
yeah, that did not. Yeah. So, in any case, moving on. I don't even remember what I was saying now. Sale. Yeah. So yeah, Sale scares me right now, but it's the kind of thing like you and I were talking about before the recording, where the sort of fantasy implications you kind of gotta ride the guy who got you there. And I think Sale's gonna do that. I think Sale is one of the best pitchers in baseball, and he's just gonna trust him to go out there and perform. And I think that's the Red Sox kind of have to, this is the cliche time, I guess, of the podcast. They have to, you dance with the one you brought, and that's just the way it is. And you got to hope that Sale pulls it together and improves his command and outpitches Kluber. That's a tough order, but that's where we are, right?
Yeah, he's got to bring his dancing shoes.
That's right.
Yeah, just as we're talking about this, the Red Sox team just went into the 10th inning again, and I don't have the stat in front of me, but anecdotally, I think this team has gone to extra innings more than any team in baseball this year. I'm just throwing that out there. I have no idea whether that's true. But that is exactly how it feels.
I don't know that it's true either, but I do know that they have gone that they've played more innings than any team this year. So
So it probably is.
yeah. I mean, they've had a couple 15-inning games and a 19-inning game. So, that's sort of padding the stats, but I'm looking it up here if I can. I don't know if they have one in. Is that extra innings? Yeah, the Red Sox are 13-3 in extra innings. Baltimore's 12-2.
Okay, so they've played a fair number as well.
Yeah, and nobody else. Oh, the Giants are 12-7.
Ooh, 13-2 versus 12-7. So they've actually had more extra inning games than the Red Sox.
13-3 versus 12-7.
Or 13-3. Okay, yeah, so they've still played more. But
Although.
they're second, right? So they're second to the Giants.
Yeah, although I think the Red Sox have played more innings. I think the Giants have played, 10, 11, and 12 inning games, where the Red Sox played 13, 15, and 19.
Take that, you last place idiots.
That's right. That's right. Well, they're in the 10th right now, and Moreland just hit one to the warning track, and not enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing. That doesn't help the amount that they've had to play this year, which has got to be taking its toll. And I think back to a podcast that we did right at the All-Star break when we were looking at how favorably the schedule looked for the second half of the year. And can you imagine if the Red Sox had played an opposite slate where they had a really easy first half and they had this incredibly hard second half, coupled with all the stuff that they've experienced here, innings-wise? It would just, I mean, I don't even think they'd be close to the division lead. So I think we have to be happy with the way that things have shaped up, considering all of the things that this team has gone through so far this year.
No, I agree. I mean, if you look at, the Pythagorean record, the Yankees are way ahead of the Red Sox. I think it's like six games or something. And that's a giant jump, the Yankees are, I think, what is it, plus 175, and the Red Sox are plus 111, I think. Just quick math off the top of my head. That's a pretty substantial difference. Not, I used to buy into that a whole lot more, but once you get to the end of the season and the players are playing the way they're playing at that moment, and the roster is much different than it was in in April and May, You've had all the trades from July, and so, you can't put that down and say, okay, well, the Yankees are definitely a better team as composed right now than the Red Sox are. But I think certainly over the course of the year, this Yankees team has underperformed to how well you would expect them to, and the Red Sox have maybe overperformed a little bit. Which is kind of nice for that to happen. I mean, if you go back, to the 2000s, and look at how things played out, it was kind of the opposite. It seemed like every year the Yankees would way outplay what you would expect from them. They'd be, 10 games up on the Red Sox, and you're like, what? No, that's not how it's supposed to be.
Right. I remember that feeling well.
Yeah.
And it does seem like every time the Yankees win a game, the Red Sox win a game, and this lead has been at three. But, again, I'm going to reference the baseball show. I was watching it because, Evan's been our great guest two times on this show, Evan Drellick. So watch that if you don't watch that show. But he's just very adamant that this division is going to come down to like the last week of the season, and it just has that feel to it. It does feel like a little bit that the Red Sox have been avoiding this possibly superior Yankees team for a decent chunk of the year. Certainly superior head to head, and I'm not sold on it being a better team overall. But I think that there's an argument to be made that the Yankees are better, and I don't feel like this division is in hand yet, even with those three games. And I know it's tough to make up three games in this amount of time, but I just feel like it's gonna happen, man. It's gonna come down to it. I still think the Red Sox will hold them off, but I think by the time it's all said and done, it's gonna be like a game.
Yeah, it sure could happen. Especially given the fact that the Red Sox have more games remaining against the Orioles, and I looked this up earlier today and put it out on Twitter. The Yankees have just destroyed the Orioles this year, and the Orioles have just destroyed the Red Sox this year. So, what did I say? The Yankees run differential is something like 170 something. 66 plus 66 of that was gained against just the Orioles.
Yeah, that pitching staff is tailor-made for the Yankees.
Well, it doesn't seem to make any difference. I mean, over the course of a season, you're talking about what, 19 different games against each team. You're gonna get your chances against Ubaldo Jimenez, and you're gonna get your chances against Kevin Gausman, for better or worse. And the Red Sox have not really had a whole lot of success against either of those guys, or any of the other Oriole pitchers. So I don't know. The Orioles are frustrating, but what are you going to do? Yeah, I getting back to your point, Jake, I agree. I don't think the Red Sox are three games better than the Yankees after tonight. They may not be, because Matt Barnes is into pitch now.
Ugh,
So
woof.
yeah, so it's looking like it could come down, to the end. And that really wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
No, it
If
wouldn't.
they lose, it would be, but the chance to beat the Yankees at the end of the season, I'll take that.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Red Sox close out with I think it's a four-game set against the Houston Astros, so that's going to be no easy task there. But it could be a precursor to the actual playoffs, so that might be a little bit cool. It's going to be interesting to see how this thing wraps up. I want to point out a couple more positive things before we go ahead and wrap up the podcast here. Drew Pomeranz, I just want to say how ridiculously wrong I was about the Pomeranz trade. I fully eat my hat with Drew Pomeranz. He has just continuously gotten better over the course of the season. He had a 3.6 ERA in the first half, 2.86 in the second half, which is actually better than Chris Sale's second half ERA of
Yeah.
3.05. So,
He hasn't thrown anywhere near as many innings as Sale, I don't think.
no, definitely not even close to the workload, but
Yeah.
it just really has been super impressive from Pomeranz, and he has not been prone to the blowups. I mean, since about May, he has been rock solid, which is it's hard to imagine where this team would be without Drew Pomeranz right now. And
Yeah,
Kudos to Dombrowski, right?
Yeah, no, I didn't love it either. I remember when when that trade came through, and there was that, I don't know, half hour period or whatever, sort of blackout time where we knew Pomerantz was coming to Boston, but we didn't know what was going the other way, and it was like, oh, please let it be anyone. But and of course, there it was. It's like, no, but yeah, I mean, I think Dombrowski has has well, I mean, he's got a proven track record. We've discussed this before, Jake. But at least with this one, he's been proven right. Certainly a lot more than I think we would have expected.
Yeah, every time I think one of his trades is going to be a big bag of suck, it comes back and it's amazing. So I'm fully expecting Thornburg to like be the best relief pitcher in baseball next year.
No, I mean, one of these has to stay bad, right? One of them?
Nope.
No?
Nope. I'm not counting on it. I mean, we have time on our side for the Thornburg trade to still pan out. And Travis Shaw has been a quiet man in the second half. So
Yeah, just like last.
yeah, exactly. He's very good at the second half vanishing act. Getting to the minor leagues of the Red Sox, I wanted to talk about the Greenville Drive a little bit because the Greenville Drive just won the Sally League championship, the South Atlantic League, this year. And that's a roster that is not devoid of important talent for the Red Sox coming up. I just want to throw some names out there that are on that roster. Jay Grom was on that roster for some point. He didn't actually, I don't believe, pitch in the playoffs there because he's on the DL. But he was on that roster. Darwinson Hernandez is on that roster, a good pitching prospect for the Red Sox. He's a lefty. Brian Mata, a really good pitching prospect for the Red Sox, who's an international signee. He's a righty. He was the youngest player in the South Atlantic League this year at 18. He pitched well this season. And then on the position player side, Bobby Dalbec came back, was a really important player. And Brett Netzer, who was the fourth round pick, a second baseman out of North Carolina, played extremely well down the stretch. And those two guys really did a lot to help the team win the championship. So it's sort of a small victory here, winning an A-ball championship, but I think it's cool and it's really good for these guys' development. So just wanted to point that out a little bit.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add. I mean, all of that is true and accurate and correct and good. I think winning is, it's good for any point in the organization. For guys to go through that playoffs and the pressure of the playoffs and deal with that on an individual level. I think it can only make you stronger as you move your way up the system and into the major leagues. So, yeah, kudos to the Greenville Drive. Congratulations to them. And looking forward to seeing some of those guys up in Boston sometime soon.
Yeah, it'll be certainly exciting. So, anything else before we close it out today, Matt?
No, the Red Sox are still going. They got through the 10th and on to the 11th. I imagine by the time this game actually ends, Hanley Ramirez's shoulder will have healed itself. So, that's good news.
Yeah, that is good news. And I want to just end the podcast by saying that, there's been a lot of negativity in the news lately with all these hurricanes that have been happening. And baseball is, the lifeblood of a lot of Caribbean nations. And unfortunately, those nations have been hit really hard by the hurricanes. So if you have any willingness to donate to those causes, that's a good cause because a Category 5 Hurricane Maria is on its way to the Caribbean right now as well. So those guys are just not getting a break. It's kind of sad to see.
Yes, I agree. Red Cross needs our money, and so do a number of outstanding organizations doing good work down there. So, yep, I agree, Jake.
Yep. All right. Well, with that, we will be with you next week at a similar time. You can rate and review this podcast. You can do so on iTunes or Stitcher. You can download us on pretty much any service. I think that we are on like everything right now, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, all of those good things. So if you like the podcast, leave us a note, give us a comment, tell us how great we are, especially Matt and his Twitter handle at MattyMaggie2000. best in the biz. You can follow me on Twitter at @DevJake. And thank you guys for downloading the show and listening and supporting us.
Thanks, guys.